Chapter 40.
Number 3. The seeking of conversions to the church. Quote, "The church," Pope Pius XI has solemnly declared, "has no other reason for its existence than to extend over the earth the kingdom of Christ and so to render people sharers of his saving redemption." End of quote. It is sad, therefore, that Catholics should live in the midst of multitudes who are not of the church and make little or no effort to win them to it. Sometimes this arises from the fact that the problem of shepherding those who are in the fold is thought so grievous that those outside it are lost sight of as part of the problem. Need one be surprised if in the end neither those inside are preserved nor those outside brought in? Make no mistake about it. The faith must be brought to the notice of every person outside the church. Timidity and human respect and difficulties of one kind and another must all be swallowed up in the supreme desire to share that gift of faith with those who have it not. The gospel must be brought to every creature. The exertions to that end must be like those of people beside themselves. Thus St. Francis Xavier. But others will counsel prudence. Yes, much depends on it in its true sphere, which is that of safeguarding necessary action, not crippling it. The rightful place of prudence in a system is that of break, whereas the error is almost invariably made of supposing that it is to be the engine. And then there is surprise at the inaction. Oh, there is need for those people beside themselves who do not think in terms of selfish caution, who live above base fear, not erring into what Pope Leo XIII branded as criminal excesses, recklessness, and that so-called prudence. For souls are being swept along in the rapid flowing river of time. Delayed effort will gather in other souls, but not those souls. The abyss of eternity will have enfolded them. And there's a quote from Cardinal L.J. Sunens. Quote, "By dint of repeating that people are not ready to receive the gospel, one would end up by not being ready to bring it to them." End of quote. Persons outside the church toss on a sea of doubt from which their hearts crave rest, but they need to be persuaded that in the church there is really faith and calm. The first step towards convincing them must necessarily be the approaching of them. How can they understand the truth unless some man show them? Acts chapter 8, verses 30 to 31. How can fantastic misunderstanding be dispelled if Catholics ever preserve a stately silence on the subject? How can the opponents of the church guess from the outward chill of Catholics the warmth of the faith that lies beneath? And are they not to be excused for thinking that Catholic belief, which seldom shows any enthusiasm, is little or not at all removed from their own admitted unbelief? There is a tendency to think that sufficient has been done when the Catholic claims have been made known by the communications media or by the addressing of public meetings. But in fact, the approach becomes the less effective according as it loses the personal touch. If conversions depended on the reaching of people in bulk by means such as the above, the present age of technology should also be one of conversions on a grand scale. But instead, it is found difficult to keep even the Catholic fold intact. No, the approach to be really effective must be an individual and intimate one. The media can be made to play an awakening or supporting part in a scheme to bring those other sheep to the Good Shepherd. But the center of that scheme must be the appeal of one person to another person. According to the laws that rule the spiritual world, as Frederick Ozanam puts it, the attraction of one soul is needed to elevate another. In other words, the law of charity must operate, and the gift without the giver is bare. But only too often does the individual Catholic assume an attitude of helplessness. He may think that many outside the church are too firmly rooted in prejudices and in ignorance to be moved. Admittedly, prejudices are many, traditional, almost inborn, and hardened by education. What resources would the Catholic have to deal with such a situation? He need not fear. He possesses in the doctrine of the Church, however simply explained, a shining sword whose efficacy is best described in Cardinal Newman's noble words, quote, "I have an intense feeling in me as to the power and victoriousness of truth. It has a blessing from God upon it. Satan himself can but retard its ascendancy. He cannot prevent it." End of quote. But also, he must remember another principle to which he must not prove false. And this is taken from De Maistre. Quote, "Truth in combating error never grows angry. Error is never calm in contending with truth." End of quote. As has been repeatedly urged in these pages, the approach to those whom it is desired to win must be like to that which the Divine Shepherd would make in such a search. There must be nothing of the controversial, nothing overbearing. Every word must breathe humility, affection, sincerity, and actions as well as words must show forth one essential thing, that they are backed by a genuine belief. Then they will seldom be seriously resented and will never fail to leave a deep impression, which will ripen in a high proportion of cases to conversion. We must always remember, said Dr. Williams, former Archbishop of Birmingham, that religion is caught, not taught. It is a flame set alight from one person to another. It is spread by love and not in any other way. We take it only from those whom we think friendly to us. Those whom we regard as indifferent or hostile cannot recommend religion to us. End of quote. If personal contact is necessary, not many cases can be dealt with by the individual worker. Therefore, for many conversions, many workers will be required. Legionaries must be multiplied. As part of any scheme, the following should receive attention. A. The work of study should be undertaken, not for the purpose of mere controversy, but to fit oneself to assist the sincere inquirer. B. Existing converts should be looked up in order to ensure that they have the support of Catholic friendships, or to bring them as suitable into Legion membership. None will be more qualified than they to meet the difficulties of their former brethren. C. The following up, from lists supplied by those who specialize in instruction, of those who had embarked on a course of instruction in which they did not persevere. Experience indicates that the default is usually due not to a loss of the desire to become Catholics, but to accidental circumstances which cause a break in the attendance, shyness or procrastination then prevents resumption. D. The opportunities of effective contact with people who are not Catholics are plentiful if legionaries would only act towards them in a natural Christian way. To Catholics who are in perplexity, in grief, or in trouble of any kind, the legionary would counsel prayer or would seek to induce them to read something likely to help them. He would speak to them of God's love and of the motherhood of Mary, thereby comforting them and uplifting them. Similarly, effective use could be made of the oft-recurring periods of trial in the lives of people who are not Catholics, but they are not utilized. The topic of religion is taboo. Only worldly sentiments are uttered which do not console nor show forth faith, nor accomplish anything. But let legionaries avail of those perfect opportunities of approach. At those times when normal barriers are shaken, the spiritual words would be gratefully received and could be made to develop fruitfully. E. A system of one-day retreats for people who are not Catholics has been established in innumerable places. The standard form would comprise Mass, 3 lectures, question session, lunch, tea, benediction of the Blessed Sacrament, and sometimes a film with a spoken commentary. If a religious house can be secured, it will provide the ideal atmosphere and will dispel misunderstandings and prejudices. The procedure has been to fix a day and then to print invitation cards bearing on the back the timetable. Through the legionaries of the district and all other possible channels, these cards are brought to the notice of people who are not Catholics, and the idea of the retreat is explained to them. There is a helpful psychology attaching to the right use of these cards. Therefore, at no stage are they to be distributed indifferently in the fashion of advertising matter. Records should be kept of those to whom they are issued, and there should be a subsequent checkup on the disposal of the cards. The card must only be given to persons who afford some degree of hope that they will go on the retreat. The taking of the card by the legionary represents the acceptance of a commission to find someone willing to make the retreat. Until this end is achieved, the card remains accusingly in one's possession, the tangible reminder of an unfulfilled commission. It has been the custom that people who are not Catholic would be accompanied by the Catholic friend who had been instrumental in bringing him or her on the retreat. The purpose of this is to make the people who are not Catholic at home in the novel conditions, to deal with questions, and to encourage recourse to the priest during the day. Silence is not enforced. The retreats are open to both men and women. They should keep to their own purpose. Converts and neglectful Catholics should not be brought on them. The larger the number who are approached, the larger will be the number on the retreat. And the larger the number on the retreat, the larger number received into the church. Experience has shown that a chain of proportion runs through this sequence. Accordingly, the doubling of the number of the initial contacts, which is definitely within our power, will double the number of conversions. Quote, that they may all be one, as you, Father, are in me, and I am in you, may they also be in us. Unquote. John chapter 17, verse 21. And the following quote is taken from Cardinal Wiseman, The Actions of the New Testament. Quote, take away our Blessed Lady's contributions to the gospel testimony, efface her testimony to Christianity, and you find not simply a link broken, but the very fastening of the whole chain wanting, not merely a gap or a break made in the structure, but the foundation gone. The belief in the wonders wrought in the incarnation, the belief of ages, the belief of the world, rest upon one point of testimony, a unit, a single voice, that of the Blessed Virgin Mary. End of quote. Number 4, the Holy Eucharist as an instrument of conversion. Too much time is often spent on arguments which, even if they are proved, do not attract to the church. The aim in all discussions should be to make those outside the church catch a glimpse of the treasures which are within. There is no more effective way of doing this than by the presentation of the doctrine of the Eucharist. Even those who know Jesus dimly and uncomprehendingly are lost in admiration of him. On the strength of human evidence, they acknowledge that he exercised an unexampled power over nature, so that the elements obeyed him, the dead returned to life, and infirmities fled at his command. He did all these things directly of his own power, because, though man, he was likewise the eternal God himself, who made all things, whose word is might. The scriptures tell how once that God-man, among innumerable other wonders, accomplished the sweet miracle of the Eucharist. Quote, Jesus took bread and blessed and broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat, this is my body. End of quote. Matthew chapter 26, verse 26. This is a mighty scripture, but for how many has it not been a sealed one? Quote, this teaching is difficult. Who can accept it? End of quote. John chapter 6, verse 60. The objection of some, even of his own disciples, has echoed down through the centuries to the infinite loss of souls. Quote, how can this man give us his flesh to eat? Unquote. John chapter 6, verse 52. Those disciples could almost be pardoned for their unbelief, for they had not grasped the real nature of him who stood in their midst. But what is it that clouds the minds of those persons who acknowledge the divinity and hence the omnipotence of Christ? Surely these should see how deceptive, how unthinkable therefore it would be for that same divine person, when solemnly addressing simple folk, to say, "My body," while meaning, "Not my body." Let them absorb the ruthless logic of Pascal. Quote, "How I detest this folly of not believing in the Eucharist. If the gospel is true, if Jesus Christ is God, where is the difficulty in the matter?" End of quote. The challenge of so overwhelming an idea as the Eucharist cannot be heard unheeding. To hold up persistently to the notice of those who are not Catholics this crowning glory of the Church must force their minds to contemplate its possibility, so that many will reason to themselves, "If this is true, how dreadful is my present loss." In the pang of that thought will come the first big impulse towards their true home. Many earnest persons outside the Church read the Scriptures, and in meditation and sincere prayer seek to draw Jesus out from the dim past of history, rejoicing if their imagination creates a vivid picture of their Lord engaged in His works of love. Oh, if these souls could only understand that in the Church there is the wonder of the Eucharist, which could bring Jesus as He is, whole and entire, in all His physical reality, with all His divinity, into the sphere of their present lives. If they could realize that by this means they could touch Him, talk to Him, contemplate Him, or busy themselves about Him more closely, more intimately by far than did His dear friends at Bethany. Nay more, by Holy Communion in union with Mary, they could render to that divine body all the loving cares of a mother, and thus, in some sense, thank Him adequately for all that He has done for them. Surely, the unsurpassable good of the Eucharist has only to be explained to multitudes outside the Church to cause them to yearn for light. Then Jesus will give them understanding of the things that are concerning Him. Like the disciples' journey into Emmaus, their hearts will burn within them as He speaks on the way and opens to them the sense of that heart saying of His, "Take, eat, this is my body," Matthew chapter 26, verse 26. And their eyes will be opened, and they will know Him in the breaking of the bread divine, Luke chapter 24, verses 13 to 35. In this recognition of the Eucharist, the misconceptions and prejudices which chilled the understanding and darkened the view of heaven melt away like snowflakes in a burning sun, so that he who had walked unseen will exclaim with overflowing heart, "One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see," John chapter 9, verse 25. And the following is a quote taken from Tavernier, Moi de Notre Dame, de T.S. Sacrament. Quote, "Our Lady of the Blessed Sacrament is Mary receiving in her capacity as universal dispenser of grace the full and absolute disposal of the Eucharist and of the graces which it comprises. For this sacrament is the most efficacious means of salvation, the most excellent fruit of the redemption brought by Jesus Christ. Consequently, it is for her to make Jesus known and loved in this sacrament. It is for her to spread the Eucharist all over the world, to multiply churches and to plant them among infidel peoples, to defend the belief in the Eucharist against heretics and the impious. It is her work to prepare souls for communion, to move them to visit frequently the Blessed Sacrament and watch constantly before it. Mary is the treasury of all the graces which the Eucharist contains, of all which lead to it, of all which flow from it." End of quote. Number 5, the irreligious populations. There is the awful problem of irreligion on a great scale. In very many of the world's centers of population, entire districts, which are nominally Catholic, are leading lives in which Mass, or the sacraments, or even prayer play no part whatsoever. In one such case, a survey discovered only 75 practicing Catholics out of a total population of 20,000. In another case, 400 attended Mass out of 30,000. And in another, 40,000 out of 900,000. Only too frequently, the irreligion of such areas is left to fester and to grow in peace. No effort worthy of the name is made to deal with it. It is argued that direct approach would be fruitless or would be resented and perhaps prove dangerous. And, strange to say, such arguments are accepted, even by those who think it natural that missionaries should go to the ends of the earth to face danger and even death. The saddest thing about such places is that the clergy are practically debarred from that direct approach. One of the dire complications of the frenzy of irreligion is that its victims turn against their fathers in God and drive them from them. Here is the unique value of the Legion. It represents the priest and carries through his plans. Yet it is of the people, so that it cannot be kept at arm's length. It lives the life of the people, so that the irreligious cannot destroy its work, nor can they prevent its approach by the smokescreen of lies, which can so easily be raised against a separate order like the clergy. What can they give in return for their life? Mark chapter 8, verse 37. What effort shall a man make for the salvation of his neighbor? Assuredly, it must be a supreme effort, even to the peril of death, were such necessary. Those great irreligious areas must be evangelized with no less determination than are the far distant mission fields. It is not suggested that those who cry hopeless or those who allege danger should be entirely ignored. Possibly, something they say will conduce to the success and to the safety of the Legion campaign. But in no circumstances should any word of theirs be allowed to paralyze that attack. Great faith must be shown if mountains of evil are to be removed, faith akin to that referred to by St. Ignatius of Loyola when he said that so great was his trust in God that he was prepared to commit himself to the deep in an oarless, sailless skiff. It will be found that martyrdom does not await the legionaries, but that a remarkable degree of success does await them. A fair number of souls are actually waiting for the first direct appeal to them. A method of approach. In conditions such as those supposed, where the most elemental obligations of religion are being ignored, the first efforts of the legionaries might be applied to the emphasizing of that great central requirement, attendance at Mass. Let a leaflet be secured which sets out in simple but effective language the beauty and power of the Mass. If the leaflet bears a colored picture illustrative of its subject, its effect will be enhanced. Armed with a supply of these, the legionaries will undertake a home-to-home visitation. To each person who accepts one, a copy of the leaflet is given, accompanied, if possible, by a gentle exhortation on devotion to the Mass. Legionaries need not be reminded that their attitude in all circumstances must be one of infinite sweetness and patience, never one of mere interrogation, never one of rebuking neglect. Rebuffs at first may be many, but these will be compensated for by many immediate successes. The ordinary methods of Legion visitation will be followed, the underlying idea being the effort to establish relations of true friendship with the persons visited. That gained, almost everything is gained. Each individual case of resumption of the practice of religion must be regarded as soldiers would view the capture of a point of vantage in war, for each one will bring others. As the captures grow in number, public opinion will begin to suffer modification. All in the area are observing the legionaries. All are talking, criticizing, thinking, and hearts that were chill begin to burn. Year will follow year, each with its substantial list of captures. For many years, the general attitude of the populace towards religion will seem to be unchanged. Then, just as a touch causes an ant-eaten fabric, which looks sound, to fall suddenly into dust, some event reveals that the hearts of the people have returned to God. The result of effort. Of a certain town with a population of 50,000, it could be said that hardly any were practicing their religion. This condition of neglect was complicated by abnormalities of every kind. A priest could not pass through many districts without insult. A presidium was started in the spirit of faith, and the apparently hopeless task of visitation was embarked upon. All were surprised by an immediate flow of results, increasing in number and in importance as the legionaries gained numbers and experience. After 3 years of unexpected success, the church authorities were emboldened to call for a general communion of men and ventured to hope for an attendance of 200. The actual number that participated was 1,100, showing that the entire population had been stirred to its depths by the 3 years apostolate. Plainly, the end is already in sight, so that the next generation in that town will be born into a changed order of things. Holiness will reign where once the Mass had been universally scorned and its ministers were derided. Other places similarly circumstanced should seek a remedy in the same way. And the following is a quote from Mark chapter 11, verses 22 to 24. Jesus answered them, "Have faith in God. Truly I tell you, if you say to this mountain, 'Be taken up and thrown into the sea,' and if you do not doubt in your heart, but believe that what you say will come to pass, it will be done for you. So I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours." End of quote. Number 6. The Legion is the complement of the missionary. The mission situation. Missionary activity here refers to that directed to peoples and groups who do not know Christ or believe in Him, among whom the church has not yet taken root, and whose culture is untouched by Christianity. In those to be evangelized, there exist wide differences in levels of culture, education, and social conditions. Even within the boundaries of one country, one can find both densely populated cities and scattered rural communities. There can be contrasts of rich and poor, highly educated and unschooled, diversity of ethnic and language groups. The number of people on the global scale who do not know Christ is expanding faster than the number of true believers. Into this vast field enters the missionary, priest, religious, or layperson. Coming from outside, they are hindered by differences of race, language, and culture. Experience and training will ease, but hardly remove, these handicaps. In a newly opened up territory, their task is to establish local Christian communities, which will eventually grow into self-supporting churches intended in turn to evangelize. Initially, they will endeavor quickly to make a wide range of contacts and friends. Where possible, they will establish needed services, such as schools and medical clinics, to give Christian witness and facilitate contacts. From converts will be selected catechists and other church personnel. The missionary or local catechist can only instruct those who want it. Creating that desire is, properly speaking, convert making. Under God, it normally comes from contact with a Catholic layperson and only later with a priest. It is a gradual growth in friendship and confidence. "I came because I know a Catholic," inquires or wont to tell a priest. To the hard-pressed missionary, the Legion offers itself as a tried and tested instrument for winning converts and ensuring their perseverance. Local in membership, with missionary leaders initially as spiritual director, it will instruct, form, and move new converts to evangelize continually and systematically. Unlike the missionary, its members do not penetrate society from the outside. They are already there, able with due formation to act as light, salt, and leaven in the community in the manner of the first Christians. Legion expansion. As the number and quality of legionaries grow, it will be necessary, in order to ensure proper training, to increase the number of presidia. Perhaps the directors may be able to assume control of more than one presidium each. Perhaps, too, it may be possible to utilize catechists and other experienced persons in the capacity of presidents for the training and inspiring of presidia. Each new presidium means 10 to 20 soldiers of the faith in action. Success in the policy of multiplying presidia would mean then, in the course of time, each priest would be organizing the efforts of a great number of apostolic workers. The result would be that he would veritably play in all but the supreme functions a part analogous to that of a diocesan bishop. As for the bishop, he would find himself in possession of an innumerable and irresistible hierarchy of workers for the faith, through whom he would be able to preach the gospel to every person in his territory. What is here proposed is not an untried plan, but the fruit of many years of successful experience of evangelization on the mission fields under varied conditions. A definite duty for each legionary. In the plan proposed, a well-defined sphere of action would be assigned to each legionary. Each area of work would be surveyed and reduced to terms of individual duties for assignment to the legionaries, each one of whom would be held strictly responsible for their proper performance. Legionaries must be made to realize that in the discharge of their duties, they freely place themselves at the disposal of the priest. Through him, they are in communion with the church's mission. One of the main objects of the legion system will be the bringing home of this responsibility to each legionary and the fitting of each one to bear it creditably. Among the duties found suitable for legionaries in the mission situation are A. Preparing the missionaries' periodic visits to isolated stations. B. Instructing catechumens and seeking new ones and encouraging their regular attendance. C. Encouraging careless and lapsed Catholics to return to the full practice of the faith. D. Conducting paraliturgical services. E. Acting as extraordinary ministers. F. Caring for the spiritual needs of the dying and for their Christian burial. Local needs will suggest other examples of spiritual and corporal works of mercy. Must legionaries be advanced in religious knowledge? The degree of knowledge depends on the kind of work required. Certainly, for winning converts and encouraging their perseverance, a basic knowledge of the faith suffices. This is amply illustrated by the rapid spread of the church in its early days. In many cases, conversions were brought about by the little, feeble, and oppressed members of that powerful, rich, and enlightened society in which they lived. Here we do not speak of formal instruction, which is always necessary, but of the effort of one heart to pour its supreme possession into another heart. It is accomplished most effectively when like deals with like. But experience shows that social barriers can be readily crossed. Each convinced Catholic, however imperfect his knowledge, has a certain mental picture of his faith and possesses the capacity to convey this impression to the mind of another whom he seeks to influence. But he will not exercise that capacity unless moved to do so by force of organization or other strong impulse. The legion system provides that driving force through motivation and apostolic assignments. As a result of his formation, a member on his own initiative is likely to be on the lookout for opportunities to communicate his faith. The legion means Mary at work. The introduction of the legion means the application to the work of the mission of two great forces. A. The principle of methodical organization, which is always attended by increase in interest and power, and B. That most potent element, the mother influence of Mary, which is attracted in fullness by the Marian system of the Legion and is lavished on souls through the medium of its intensive apostolate. In very fact, the spreading of the light of faith cannot be accomplished other than in concert with her. Efforts over which she does not preside are like the oil without the lamp. Perhaps it is an insufficient appreciation of this fact that accounts for the rarity of magnificent conquest for the faith today. In earlier ages, whole peoples were rapidly converted. Saint Cyril of Alexandria did not hesitate to declare at the Council of Ephesus in 431 that it was by Mary that they were all won to Christ. Moreover, the great patron of the missions, Saint Francis Xavier, gave it as his own experience that wherever he admitted to place at the foot of the Savior's cross the figure of the Divine Mother, those countries revolted against the gospel which he had brought to them. If through the legionary apostolate, this most fruitful action of Mary can be enabled to exert itself in the mission fields, why should not those days, referred to by St. Cyril, come once again on earth, so that whole territories and nations will put aside their errors and joyfully embrace the Christian faith? And the following is a quote from Bossuet. Quote, "How foolish the presumption, or how sublime and heavenly the inspiration, which has now taken possession of those fishermen. Consider for a moment their enterprise. Never has prince or empire or republic conceived so lofty a plan. Without any apparent chance of human aid, these Galileans partitioned out the whole world for future conquest. They formed a determined plan to change the religion established all over the world, whether false or in part true, whether Jewish or Gentile. They desired to establish a new worship, a new sacrifice, a new law, because, said they, a certain man, whom men crucified at Jerusalem, so ordained it." End of quote. Number 7, the peregrinatio pro Christo. The ambition to get in touch with every soul must begin with those near at hand. It must not stop there, but should proceed to symbolic steps far beyond the sphere of normal life. That purpose is facilitated by the legionary movement known as the Peregrinatio pro Christo. This name is adopted from the missionary epic of the monks of the West, immortalized in Montel Lambert's classic. Quote, "That invincible multitude went forth from their own country and from their kindred and out of their father's house," unquote. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. "And traversed Europe in the 6th and 7th centuries, rebuilding the faith which the fall of the Roman Empire had brought down with it." In the same idealism, the Peregrinatio pro Christo sends teams of legionaries who have the time and means to spend limited periods in distant places where the religious conditions are bad on, quote, "the delicate, difficult, unpopular mission of revealing that Christ is the Savior of the world. It must be undertaken by the people," unquote, Pope Paul VI. Nearby places do not qualify for the Peregrinatio pro Christo. If possible, it should be to a different country. This assertion, even for as little as a week or two, of the principle of traveling and venturing for the faith can transform legionary thinking and strike the imagination of all. Number 8, in Colle Marie. Indeed, generous hearts in many instances will not be content with giving just a week or two, but will wish to offer a more substantial term of service away from home. Such legionaries who can secure for themselves a means of livelihood in the place in view, and who can stay away for as much as 6 months, a year, or even more without detriment to family or other commitments, may be appointed by the Concilium or a Senatus de Regia to such a missionary assignment for an appropriate period. The concurrence of the authorities of the place in view is, of course, necessary. These volunteers are known as Incolae Mariae, a word expressive of their temporary sojourn in a distant place in a spirit of immolation through Mary. Number nine, Exploratio Domini Callis. Exploratio Domini Callis is the term by which is known what might be called a mini peregrinatio, and which might be translated as the Sunday search for souls. Every presidium in the world is urged, if possible as a body, to devote at least one Sunday in the year to an expedition to some place, possibly a problem area at a little distance away, but at the same time not so far as to absorb undue time in traveling. The exploratio need not be limited to one day. Two or three days might be found possible. Exploratio Domini Callis enables the majority, in many cases all, of the members of a presidium to undertake such a venture. It is recognized that even with the best of will, the peregrinatio pro Christo itself is not a possibility for the majority of legionaries. Experience shows that it is necessary to stress what the Concilium has repeatedly emphasized, that is, that Exploratio Domini Callis is essentially a presidium project. Consuls and presidia are asked to keep this point in mind when Exploratio Domini Callis is being organized. Chapter 41, The Greatest of These is Love. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 13. Mary was so utterly full of charity that she was found worthy to conceive and bring into the world him who is charity itself. The Legion of Mary, depending for its very life on devotedness to her and imitation of her, must necessarily be distinguished by the self-same quality of intense charity. It must be full of charity. Then only will it bring charity into the world. It is important, therefore, that the following directives be carefully observed. Number one, for entry to the ranks of the Legion, there shall be no social, racial, national, or color discrimination. Fitness for membership is to be the only test. The legionary apostolate will accomplish even more by indirect action, that is, as the leaven in the community, than directly by the works in hand. If the entire community is to be brought fully under the influence of legionary action, it follows that the legion's ranks must contain representatives of every section of the community. Number two, within its own ranks there should be an unaffected simplicity and sincere mutual charity among the members, all distinctions being non-existent. If love is due to those whom the legionary serves, it is no less due to one's fellow members. The spirit of distinction is evidence of the absence of the first qualification for membership, which is the spirit of love. The whole idea and spirit of the Legion is one of intense charity and sympathy, which, before radiating its warmth outside, must first of all burn brightly and strongly on the domestic hearth of the Legion itself. Quote, "By this everyone will know you are my disciples, if you have love for one another," unquote. John chapter 13, verse 35. Charity practiced in its ranks will soon be practiced at large. Divisions removed by membership are on the way to being removed from people outside. Under number three, towards other organizations, whose aims are compatible with the church's mission, there should be a spirit of readiness to give cooperation and assistance whenever possible. Not all Catholics can be brought into the Legion's own ranks, for its requirements are far from easy. However, all should be encouraged to participate in some way in the work of the Church. Legionaries can further this through their apostolate and personal contacts. It should be noted, however, that whatever cooperation is given should not place additional burdens on legionaries to the detriment of their own apostolate. It is important also that there be discernment in regard to the degree and type of assistance which is given and to whom it is given. In this connection, reference should also be made to the sections, Control of the Work by the Presidium, Chapter 39, Number 6, and The Intimate Nature of the Legionary Work Must Be Safeguarded, Chapter 39, Number 8. Number 4, towards the pastors of the Church, there should be shown the filial love due to them as spiritual fathers and shepherds. Legionaries should share their anxieties and help them by prayer, and as far as possible by active work, so that they may be better able to overcome difficulties and carry out their duties with greater success. Since pastors of the church have the God-given role of communicating divine truth and graces of the sacraments, it should be the legionaries' concern to keep people in touch with these bearers of divine gifts and to repair the link where it has been broken. This is especially necessary in the case of those who are in any way alienated from the clergy for reasons justified or unjustified. People who are seriously ill can be very reluctant to consult a doctor. Often it takes one's marriage partner, family, or friend to supply the necessary encouragement. When spiritual health is at stake, much depends on the quality of charity in those who are close to the one needing help. The formation of them to take the initiative in mediating between priests and souls, and to do so with gentle refinement. This is an exquisite form of charity. They act as agents of the Good Shepherd who calls them, through their baptism, to enter into his work. And the following is a quote taken from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 1 to 8. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions, and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious, or boastful, or arrogant, or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. But as for prophecies, they will come to an end. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will come to an end. And that's the end of chapter 41 in the Legion Handbook.